Assim, Paulo. Convergence conditions. And related properties, again from Jacobi and Gauss-Seidel. There is a very nice result connecting Gauss-Seidel and Hermitian positive definite matrices. You find this theorem here. We comment. We give the statement and comment it, but we will not develop the proof. The following: let A be Hermitian non-singular and with the main entry is strictly positive. They are real because the matrix is the Hermitian, but we require also that they are strictly positive. The result is the following: Gauss-Seidel converges if and only if A is positive definite. If we example, numerical example, if we have the following Hermitian I try to give you an example where there is not diagonal dominance, say I don't know if this example works. Let us check it. This is. I have to consider positive. This is Hermitian, yes. Non-singular. This is minus one, plus one. No, it is singular. If I increase, I don't know what increase. Singular matrix. I don't like very much this example, but it works. This matrix is Hermitian, non-singular. It is diagonal dominant. I could have preferred a not diagonal dominant matrix, but I would have preferred it before. This is Hermitian. Non-singular. It is positive definite. Yes, because with Gauss-Gorin circles, you have these two. So the eigenvalues the real eigenvalues lambda are belong to the interval 0 0 and 3 excluded because this is irreducible. Therefore, the theorem applies. This matrix is positive definite. So we can conclude that Gauss-Seidel converges even if we know already this because this matrix is diagonal dominant. So this is not a very nice example. The theorem applies. A comment, a visual comment to this result. If we sketch let it, this be the set of Hermitian matrices. We have inside the positive, positive definite. Here, we can zoom the set of the matrices having a strict diagonal dominant case, and let me draw well it. Here you can see the set of matrices for which Gauss-Seidel converges. Hermitian positive. Strict the diagonal dominance, convergence of Gauss-Seidel. Here, in the PDF file, you can find more relevant example than the previous. There is another natural question, I would say, regarding the possible connection between Jacobi's and Gauss-Seidel's convergence behaviors. Are there general results regarding any relation between the convergence of the two considered methods. General results? No, the answer is no for results regarding general arbitrary matrices. But there is a famous theorem, also in this case we give only the statement, which establishes this connection between particular matrices. Which are these particular matrices? Matrices A with again the main entry is non-zero, and let G, that is the iteration matrix of Jacobi, that is this, and let the iteration matrix of the Jacobi method be non-negative. I will show you an example of this case. Then only one of the following cases occurs. This theorem is the so-called Stein-Rosenberg theorem. Four cases. The two iteration matrices, the assumption regards only the iteration matrix for Jacobi. Here we have the iteration matrix for Gauss-Seidel. The two spectra ready are both zero or. The spectral radius of G is strictly less than the spectral radius of J, which is strictly less than 1. In this case, we have that both converge. And that Gauss-Seidel is faster. You probably remember that the spectral radius of the iteration matrix can be chosen as a measure of convergence speed. Or, third case, two radii are again equal, but are also equal to 1. No convergence. And last case is again a case of non-convergence. The spectral radius of G is greater, strictly greater than the spectral radius of J, which is greater than 1. Again, more convergence. The interesting case is obviously this. And we see that the most relevant aspect of this case is that when we have a matrix with these requirements, it is better. Not only we have convergence for both methods, But it is better to use the Gauss-Seidel method because it converges faster. This condition seems unfair to check, but it is simple, immediate, because the matrix J is easy to compute. Let us consider again a 2x2 general case. We have A. J is 0 minus here you have with the minus sign this entry divided by the entry on the same row. Similarly, on the second row, we have on the main diagonal you have all 0. This is mandatory. And on the other positions, you have with the sign minus the corresponding entry of A divided by the entry on the same row we are considering. So a matrix 2x2 satisfying the assumptions of this theorem can be this. Negative, so we could have I have an assumption that must be made is that differently from the general case we always consider till now, A is real. Usually we consider complex matrices, but this requirement implies that the matrix we are considering is real. For example, if you put here minus 1. So the sign, the signs of the main and the off-diagonal entries must be opposite. So you easily fulfill this assumption. In this case, it happens exactly what one naively expects, that the Gauss-Seidel method, when both converges faster than Jacob. It is not true in general, but in this case it is true and can be proven. A last result, again regarding relation between the convergence of these two methods, Jacobian Gauss-Seidel, and involving three diagonal matrices. This result we are to be able to prove. It is not so complicated, so we will prove it. Again, a particular case. Now A is three diagonal and complex in this case. So let A be a three-diagonal complex matrix. Three diagonal. So we have on the main diagonal A1, A2, AN. We use only one index
in the upper part C1 and so on C
n minus 1
and then in the lower part B
0 elsewhere. We require also that we have non-zero entries on the main diagonal. This is a necessary assumption because otherwise the sum methods are not applicable.
Otherwise, the two methods would not apply. The result. The result is the following. It can be written in a very compact way. The spectral radius of G the spectral radius then the spectral radius of G is the square of the spectral radius of J. So if we are convergence, also in this case, if we are we may not have convergence, but if we have convergence, we have this. So the Gauss-Seidel method converges. Converges faster. Why? We see, we give a look to the proof because it uses many processes and some tricks that can be useful also for other developments in the following of the course. We start from J. We start from J. In this case, how J is made? It's easy. J along the main diagonal we have all zeros, and the other entries of J are obtained considering the corresponding entry of the matrix A, changing the sign, so here we would have C1 minus, and we have to divide by the entry in the same row, A sub 1. And so on until minus C and minus 1 A and minus 1. 0 otherwise on the lower co-diagonal minus for the same reason minus B1 over A2 until minus B and minus 1 over A. In order to be used during the proof, we will introduce a special similarity transformation that is also called in this case scaling. Similarity transformation. Similarity transformation given the matrix S as the form S J S inverse. we choose S in this way. S is diagonal, so its inverse will be easy to compute. When the similarity matrix is diagonal, the transformation is called also a scaling or a balancing. We put on the diagonal of S the powers of the number alpha, complex alpha, non-zero. 1 alpha to the 0 power, alpha, alpha squared, and so on, alpha to the power n minus 1. So, this inverse, we know that the matrix is invertible because alpha is non-zero, is sufficient to change the signs of all the exponents. What happens when we multiply S by J, by the inverse of S, if J is tridiagonal with that structure? The result is again a tridiagonal matrix having again zeros on the main diagonal. So I write here S J inverse of S makes four zeros. In this position in the product you have from the left one, and from the right, second column, the inverse of A. So here you find the original entry, which was minus C1 over A1 multiplied by the inverse of A. So I add in the denominator alpha. In this position, this, you have original entry minus B1 over A over A2, which is multiplied on the left by second row alpha and on the right by 1. So also here we have a factor alpha, but at the numerator. This happens in all the other entries of the co-diagonals. I mean that here you would find the entry of J, which was C2 over A2, divided by alpha, here, as before, minus B2 over A3, multiplied by alpha, and so on. This is a trick. The effect of this trick will be seen soon. We could also rewrite this metric as the terms on the lower part are obtained from the lower part of J, which was this, multiplied by alpha. If I consider D inverse by B, this gives this codiagonal. But this codiagonal is the same multiplied by alpha. So this part of the matrix is obtained by alpha, by D inverse by B. And for the same reason, the left part of the matrix is plus the same as this, which was 1 over alpha, 1 over, sorry, V minus 1, it was V by C. But here we have that all the entries are divided by alpha. D'accordo? Alpha qui moltiplica, qui alpha divide. Why we are considering a transformation, a similarity transformation? Because we know that these transformations maintains the eigenvalues. OJ. And we are thinking of the main necessary and sufficient condition for convergence, that is rho G less than 1. So the eigenvalues of J are important. So the eigenvalues of these matrices are the same. This is the reason why I can study the eigenvalues of that matrix instead of the eigenvalues of J. Back in right here, D. Eigenvalues lambda. Me of J are the zeros of the characteristic polynomial of this matrix of the polynomial, which is the characteristic polynomial of that matrix, that determinant alpha minus, let us use the letter mi by I. Alpha is different from zero. I can put the inverse of alpha as a factor, as a multiplicative factor, that of 1 over alpha. So here I have to correct the factor with exponent 2. Here I have only the inverse of d by c. And here I have to add a factor alpha. This is an algebraic manipulation. The zeros of this polynomial, this is a non-zero factor, so I can consider the determinant of this matrix in the sense that the complex number mi, which annihilate this determinant, are the eigenvalues of J. Let us compare this characteristic polynomial with the characteristic polynomial of G, the iteration matrix on the outside. We want to put in relation the eigenvalues of J and the eigenvalues mi of J and the eigenvalues lambda of G. So for the eigenvalues lambda of G, we have the characteristic polynomial of G, which is Just remember that G is defined as in Gauss Seidel we have the inverse of the first matrix, the matrix M, which in this case is D minus B, by multiplied by G. So the characteristic polynomial of this matrix is the determinant of G minus, so the matrix G minus lambda I, the identity matrix. Also in this case we play with matrices and their inverses in order to recognize some resemblance between this matrix and this matrix in order to state the result. I can put as a factor on the left this inverse. I mean, the determinant of what? Metto in evidenza l'inversa di B meno B on the left. Square bracket. C. Minus lambda. Here I have to put B minus B. So I will recover the identity matrix. Again, I have to find, I have to force the appearance, the occurring of the inverse of D. So from this matrix, I put again as a factor the matrix D. Here I have the inverse. I don't touch the leading part of the formula. Let me check if it is correct. Di, D minus 1, B are all inverting. I apply the inversion equal to that. The inverse of the product. The inverse of the second factor by the inverse of the first, again multiplied by these two terms. Now I multiply, expand the product, and I can write here. This is the final form, I hope. The inverse of this, fine. The inverse of D by C minus lambda. The inverse by D, the identity matrix. The inverse of D by B with sine plus and lambda multiplied plus lambda, the inverse of D by B. This is the form expression which can be compared with the other characteristic polynomial. All this if determinant must be zero if lambda is the eigenvalue of G. This term, by the Binet theorem, can be cancelled. This determinant has to be zero. What can I conclude? Conclusions. If as is, me is eigenvalue of J, is me is eigenvalue of J, and I choice and eigenvalue of J different from zero, we exclude the value of zero, and alpha is choice, is chosen as alpha equal to me, it is correct. I can choose alpha as any non-zero complex constant. This polynomial becomes the matrix appearing here becomes mu squared mu by mu. And if you give a look to this matrix, you see D minus 1 C, D minus 1 C, mu squared, there is an error in the sign, minus. This is the square of mu by I, and here we have minus lambda by I, and finally here we have again mu squared by this matrix, D inverse by D, lambda D inverse by D. So if we assign to lambda the values, the square of mu, then lambda is eigenvalue of G. È chiaro, cioè, se partiamo da un valore mu di J e scegliamo come alfa proprio il valore di quell'autovalore di J, diverso da zero, allora riconosciamo, we recognize exactly the same matrix when we assign to lambda the value, the square of mu. So lambda equal the square of mu is an eigenvalue of G. The same procedure can be applied in the reverse sense. In the sense that if we start from lambda. Lambda is eigenvalues of G. We choose alpha as square of lambda and obtain then the choice. Then we have that mu equals the the square, the complex, one of the two complex roots of lambda in the complex field. Okay, here. Lambda, and again here, here lambda, and again here lambda, and you find exactly this matrix with delicate value of lambda. So the proof is completed. The conclusion is that by the Stein-Rosenberg theory and by this result from the result, we are able to recognize two cases in which it is preferable use Gauss-Seidel instead of Jacobi. It's not an easy question in general, but in these two cases, all is fine with this case.